Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 88. I'm recording it on Saturday, January 31st, 2009. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. And this selection is entitled Long Stroll. The title of the podcast is Can PE10 be used to predict presidential success? This is a not super serious podcast. It's a little bit an effort in just having some fun, but I don't think it's entirely silly either. I do think there's some legitimacy to the analysis I'll be running past you. If you take it too seriously, that would be a mistake. It cannot be taken too seriously, but I do think there's some instructional value. So it's the idea here is to play a little game and get outside of the world of investing, get into the world of politics using a tool that we usually use in the world of investing to look at political issues and sort of for the purpose of having a little fun, but it's instructional fun. I think it actually does help us think about, this exercise may help us think about how PE10 works, what PE10 is, what overvaluation is, why overvaluation is bad, why the idea that we don't need to change our stock allocations in response to big price changes is a very, very bad idea. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to go through the presidents that have been inaugurated during the presidents who have been in office during my lifetime. I'm going to start with President Eisenhower. I was born in 1956, and the president was Eisenhower. He was inaugurated back in 52 or 53, I guess January of 53. So I'll be starting with him and going all the way through the present day with President Obama, and I'll be giving the PE10 level that applied when the president was inaugurated, and using that PE10 level, trying to offer thoughts as to whether one should have expected that president to have been successful or not, whether he would have a successful presidency, and making the argument that PE10, just that one number, the number that applies on the day of inauguration, can give you a pretty important clue as to whether a president is going to be a successful president or not. Now, that's clearly a very bold claim. It almost, the trouble people have with rational investing is they say it's too good to be true. How can knowing one number tell you whether your stock investment is going to, whether you're going to get a good return on your stock investment or not? And so I'm sort of moving it to another field, moving it from the field of investing to the field of politics, and making similar sorts of claims that require that you know the future, which seems impossible, and showing how it really does make sense, though, and it really does work. That knowing, we've looked at historical data, and we've shown that knowing the PE10 value throughout the entire history of the U.S. market would have helped you to invest more effectively. So, but people don't believe it. Many people don't believe it. They just say, that can't be so. Well, it can be so, but in order to know why it is so, you have to understand how it works. And so I'm taking it to a different field, the field of presidential political analysis, and saying, look, this tool works in this area as well. It doesn't work perfectly. I can't tell you today, President Obama is going to be a successful president or President Obama is not going to be a successful president, but I can get clues just by knowing the PE10 value, and the clues are remarkably strong. They're remarkably predictive, more predictive than you would expect, certainly, just from knowing one number. So the insight provided by the PE10 value is a powerful insight. Now, in order to start, I'll just start with Eisenhower and I'll go all the way through Obama. But the first thing I have to do is just a little bit of a preface explaining why this would work so that newcomers have some idea what we're talking about. I advocate the rational model of understanding, rational investing model of understanding how stock investing works. The rational model is a rejection of the dominant model of today. The dominant model of today is the passive investing model, and the efficient market theory is the intellectual construct that supports the passive investing model. The efficient market theory essentially says that the stock price is always right. They don't say it that way, but if you try to boil away all the verbiage, that's what they're saying. When they use the word efficient, they're saying the market's efficient. What they mean is that the market is rational. What they mean is that the market sets the right price. So that if somebody were to pay the wrong price for stock, somebody else would jump in, and the word they use is exploit that mistake and thereby correct it. And that ultimately, you know, when you look at the value of the S&P or you look at the value of the Dow Jones average, the number you're getting is a good take on the true value of the stock market. That's why they say you can't beat the market. The rational investing school says just the opposite. It rejects passive investing. It rejects the efficient market theory in total. It says that there is a tendency for the market to try to become efficient over time. We do believe in efficient markets, but we don't believe that the market is instantly efficient. We believe that the market is always striving to become efficient, but that it can take up to 30 years for that to happen. It's a slow-acting process, and that in the short term, the market is emotional, not rational. It's often overvalued or undervalued, not well-priced, not priced properly, not efficient. The implication of that is that if you buy stocks at times of when they are overvalued and the market is striving to become efficient, which means it's striving to become properly valued, you're going to be crushed. You buy stocks at insanely dangerous price levels like those that applied from 1995 through the first part of 2008, and the odds are heavily against you receiving a good return on your money. And on the other hand, if you buy stocks at times when they're reasonably priced or well priced, the odds are heavily in your favor that you're going to obtain a strong long-term value proposition. So, people who believe in rational investing were not surprised by the price crash. We all saw it coming. You don't see any surprise on the part of John Walter Russell or Rob Bennett or Robert Shiller or, you know, Cliff Asness or Rob Arnott or Ed Easterling. All these people have been writing for years about how the overvaluation that applied was certain to end, and it was going to end in a massive price crash. There's no other way. When stocks are overvalued as much as they were in the late 1990s, the only way to get back to fair value is through a price crash, because the overvaluation is just so great. Now, there are implications from that. What that means is that I've tried to calculate in terms of dollars how much funny money. See, the overvaluation is not real. That's the key. I call it cotton candy. The key to all this is the stock price that is reported in the paper, the Dow Jones average or the S&P, is not a real number. It's a fantasy number. Today it's real. Today we're at fair value. So when you read the S&P today or the Dow Jones average today, it's a real number. It's a ballpark accurate number. We were valued. The PE10 tool is just a tool that tells us how overvalued the market is. And you can learn more about PE10 by listening to, there's a podcast on PE10. And there's articles at the site as well. And you can read material by Robert Shiller and others that'll talk about that. But PE10 tells us how overvalued the market is. Well, PE10 told us in January of 2000 that the market was valued at three times fair value. So that means however much money, whatever the value was of all the companies that comprised the S&P 500, we were pretending that those companies were valued at three times that. And whatever your portfolio size was, if you had $100,000, if your portfolio statement said you had $100,000 worth of money in stocks, what you really had was $35,000, and then $65,000 of cotton candy. And that all of our economic troubles today are the result of us all living this big deception, pretending that we had a whole lot more money saved for retirement than we did. And then as that number returned to reality, as the reality principle asserted itself, we all freaked out. Our retirements are in jeopardy. We don't have enough money to afford all the things we bought. We have to lose our houses, lose our cars, lose our jobs, lose our businesses. And that causes an economic recession or the possibility of an economic depression. It causes horrible, horrible turmoil, horrible human misery. Now, say that you were elected president. You're trying to govern the nation. There's a book that came out in the political science field. I haven't read it, but I read reviews of it. I read write-ups of it that was called The Seven Keys to the Presidency. It came out some time ago. And the guy, was a political science professor, and he tried to come up with, just as people try to predict the stock market, he was trying to predict presidential elections. And he said, instead of just being a pundit and saying, I like so-and-so, his speech was great. That's pretty, it's popular, but it's sort of weak in the analysis department. He tried to be a little more scientific. And he said, what are the factors that really make a difference? Does it make a difference if you're president during a war? Does it make a difference if the inflation rate reaches such and such a point, during your presidency? And he looked at all sorts of factors, and he found seven that would always successfully predict who was going to win the election. And he called those the seven keys to the presidency. I don't recall what they were, and you could probably look it up on the internet, but I don't recall. It was years ago when I read about this. But I know that some of the factors were economic, at least one, and I think more than one. I think it was probably two or three that were economic in nature. Because it's the economy, how the economy does really determines whether a presidency is successful. Now, if you're president during a war, the war is more important. But, during my lifetime, we haven't really been involved in a major war. We've had the Iraq War and we had the Vietnam War. We've had some wars. But it wasn't like the Second World War or the Civil War. It wasn't a war that, was the dominant issue. So even during times of war in my lifetime, and that's as far back as I'm going, Eisenhower, the really dominant thing has been the economy. So voters certainly consider stuff like the war. They consider the candidates. They consider the president's personality, whether they like him. There's all sorts of factors. No one's saying different. But the dominant factor is, does the economy do well or does it not? What often happens is someone will say, do you like this president? And people will say, oh no, can't stand that guy. But when the economy was doing well, excuse me, I'm still battling a cold and my voice is weak. Excuse me. When the economy was doing well, they loved him. And then the economy does bad and all of a sudden they hate the guy. What they really hate is the bad economy. So what most of us do, not everyone, but it sort of depends how ideological you are, but the average citizen is not terribly ideological. The average citizen, it was that question Ronald Reagan used to ask, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? That's how most people assess presidents. Am I better off or not? And by better off, they mean, is the economy doing better? So, as Clinton used to say, as his campaign slogan, it's the economy, stupid. Not his campaign slogan, but his, it was his campaign. It was the people running his campaign. It was their slogan. It wasn't a slogan for the country, but it was a slogan of campaign strategy. So the point is that the economy is the number one factor. Well, when stocks were valued at three times fair value back in 2000, think of how much funny money was in the economy, making us all feel rich. I've calculated that number to be roughly $16 trillion. And I came up with that number by looking at how much of a drop we've seen with the price crash, and that number is a little more than 8 trillion. So you have an 8 trillion number, which you know, was just funny money, because now we're at fair value. So anything above that was funny money. So that 8 trillion we lost was funny money. There was 4 trillion lost in the housing bubble, and the housing bubble was just a subset of the stock bubble. It's because people felt so rich because of the funny money in the stock market that they went ahead and inflated the price of housing as well. So that's another 4 trillion that was caused by the stock bubble. So that's 12 trillion. And we were losing money from the stock bubble even before this price crash. We were losing money all the way back to the year 2000 when we reached the high point on valuations. That was about another 4 trillion. So you have 8 plus 4 plus 4 is 16. The 4 trillion from 2000 until the price crash, that's a little high, that number, because it doesn't count dividends. So that number is on the high side by a trillion or two. But the 8 trillion number is on the low side by a trillion or two. I've seen that estimated at 9 trillion and even close to 10 trillion. So I used a low number on one and a high number on the other, and I think it sort of averages out to about 16 trillion total. And that's just a back of the envelope sort of calculation. So here's how you can use PE10 to predict presidential success. If a president gets the benefit of 16 trillion of funny money, well, that's going to make his presidency seem awfully good to an awful lot of people. You know, a lot of people are going to be living well, or at least think they're living well. They're going to think they're wealthy for those years during which 16 trillion of funny money is running through the economy. On the other hand, if you happen to become president at a time when there's 16 trillion of funny money and the funny money disappears, a lot of people are going to be very unhappy. They're going to say, throw the bum out. You know, I used to have 100,000 in my portfolio. I've now got 35,000. What's the deal? Who's president anyway? Let's get rid of that guy. So the point is, I'm not in favor of any of this. I'm in favor of stable markets. I'm in favor of rational investing. With rational investing, we would be encouraging people not to cause overvaluation, to lower their stock allocations at times of insane prices. But that's not the world we live in today. Most experts encourage passive investing. They thereby encourage overvaluation. And they encourage funny money in the economy, and that causes certain presidents to be successful and other presidents to be unsuccessful for reasons that have very little to do with their policies. See, one of the things that it's a bit of a pet peeve of mine, is people will say, you know, so-and-so is a successful president. And they'll say, why do you think that? And they'll say, oh, the economy did so well. And how do you know? It's because of his policies. If the stock market was pushing all this funny money in, you know, maybe we just thought the economy was doing well and it really wasn't. So the game I'm going to play in this podcast is to go through these presidents from Eisenhower through Obama and just look at the PE10 level that applied on the day of their inauguration. And from that, try to offer some speculation as to whether it was likely or not that they would have successful presidencies. Eisenhower came in January of 53. The PE10 level was 13. Eisenhower, by objective standards, had a successful presidency. He was a Republican. He was reelected. So he won re-election. That's always a sign of a successful presidency, that you could run again and be elected again. And then in 1960, when Eisenhower stepped down after two terms, another sign of a successful presidency would be for your party to be re-elected after you left office. That doesn't usually happen. After an 8-year term, usually the other party moves in. But in Eisenhower's case, it came real close. The other party did come in. Kennedy came in, who was a Democrat, but it was a very close election. So Nixon almost defeated Kennedy, and that would have been the Republican holding that office. So Eisenhower, by objective terms, was a successful president. Did the PE10 level suggest that success? I would say, for the most part, it did. Eisenhower came in with a PE10 level of 13. Fair value is 14, 15. So, He came in with a PE10 level slightly below average. That's a good sign. Because when the PE10 level is only 13, the odds are stronger that it's going to go up than that it's going to go down. So the downside potential, the downside risk, is not that great. The upside potential is significant. From 13, you can go a long ways. We were at 44 in January 2000. So you've got a lot of upside running room. The lowest we've ever been is 7. So you've got some downside running room, but not nearly as much. See, PE10 never gives you a definitive statement. PE10 always gives you probabilities. You can never say such and such is going to happen. It's not a crystal ball. What it does, it's more like a, the way to think about it is the house in a casino. The house sets things up so that the probabilities favor it. And that's what you have when you use PE10. If you use PE10 to guide your allocation decisions, the odds will always favor you in the stock market. But you'll never be guaranteed of anything. You'll always just have the odds on your side instead of having the odds against you. 13 is a good PE10 level. Now, it helps to have a little bit of a broader perspective, to know something more than just the number. Because if you're going to say, I'll be talking about President Obama later on at the end, but if you're going to say 13 is a good number, you would have to say, Obama has a 14 on his inauguration. So it's a very, very similar number. So if I'm going to say that everything's rosy for Eisenhower, if I went strictly by the numbers, I would also say it's rosy for Obama. I don't think that's so, at least not entirely so. To really see how rosy it was for Eisenhower, you have to put it in context of the time. And Eisenhower came in 53, but it wasn't just that he had a 13 PE10 level, a good PE10 level. There were years of good PE10 levels before that. And that means that the situation was ripe for a big run-up in prices. See, what causes overvaluation is investor confidence. Whenever you have undervaluation, you have too little investor confidence. That's the thing you have to solve. That's what we have to solve today. Investors' confidence has been shaken. The job of policymakers today is to persuade middle-class investors to have confidence in the market again. And that's hard to do. It's a psychological battle. It's not really done, I don't believe, through passage of stimulus packages. A recent podcast I did was argued that the economic stimulus package is a sideshow. It doesn't address the real question of restoring confidence. Confidence in the Eisenhower years was easy to come by because there had been years of low prices. So we hadn't had a price crash for a long time. We had, of course, a massive price crash in the late 1920s when we went up to a PE10 level of 33. That was the highest on record until the late 90s. And so, but that was ancient history by the time Eisenhower came in. From 29 to 53, that's over 20 years. So it's been a long time. And we had had two devastating historical events. The Great Depression was of the worst events that have ever taken place in U.S. history, what are the worst? I would think the Depression has to be one of the worst. The Civil War was certainly one of the worst. And the World War II was one of the worst. So two of the three most devastating events in our nation's history had taken place within a few years of each other. So that means confidence was very low during the Depression. Confidence was rock bottom. During World War II, confidence was rock bottom. There was only one direction it could go, and that was up. So that 13 PE10 level was probably an artificially low PE10 level. Had people not been so nervous, so worried, so anxious for so many years, Eisenhower would have probably had a PE10 level of 18 or 20. But it had been kept artificially low because people were anxious. And so all he had to do, I certainly don't say any of these presidents were trying to get the PE10 level up. That, please don't misunderstand. They weren't thinking in these terms. But all that he had to do to have a successful presidency was to create a lot of confidence. All he had to do was dispel the lack of confidence that had held the P10 level down for so long, and it was going to shoot up. It's really all he had to do. And so I would say that the P10 level in this case was a predictor, and it never is an absolute sign, because there's obviously things that apply other than the economy. But it was a predictor that this president had a good chance of being successful, and I would say in this case he was. So the prediction was fairly good. Now, Kennedy came in January of 61. This is a case that's a little more complicated. Kennedy, on his inauguration, had a P10 level of 18.5. It's a fairly high number. It's not quite in the danger zone. The danger zone is above 20, but it's close. You know, it's a P10 level high enough. I mean, if I'm using the scenario surfer and I have a P10 level of 18 come up, I usually go with a fairly high stock allocation, at least 50%, possibly 70, possibly 80, if I'm feeling, you know, if I'm feeling my oats. But when it goes above 20, then I get nervous and I lower it. Quite a bit. When it goes above 20, often I'll go to maybe, if it's at 18 or 19, I might drop to 50, and then if it gets to 22, I would often drop to 20, something like that. I'm always playing with different things. So it's not a frightening P10 level. It could stabilize at 18 and everything would be fine. It could drop a little bit. The P10 level could drop to 17 or 16 and investors would still be earning good, strong returns. So that would not cause a problem. So you can't say that 18 is a frightening P10 level, but it's getting there. So to the extent that the P10 level gives you a signal, is this presidency going to be successful, you would be inclined to say, more likely not. You know, it's a close call, but more likely, you know, 60% chance unsuccessful, 40% successful. Most people would declare John F. Kennedy's presidency a successful presidency. He's remembered with a great amount of fondness. Now, I think you have to be a little careful, because the factors here are unusual. Kennedy, of course, was assassinated, and he was very young and attractive when he was assassinated, and it was a traumatic event in the history of our country. People didn't think such a thing was possible until it had happened. I mean, after that, there were other attempted assassinations, and it's become sort of part of the cultural fabric that this sort of thing happens. But at that time, it was shocking. So I think that's affected our assessment of whether the Kennedy presidency was successful or not. I don't say it was not successful, but it was not so clear that it was going to be a successful presidency. Kennedy, as I say, he won by a small margin. I imagine that the odds are that he would have been reelected, because any incumbent president, the odds are he will be reelected. But that wasn't a sure thing. There were things that happened during the Kennedy presidency that were rocky. You know, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Bay of Pigs. And at the time he was assassinated, my understanding, I was very young at the time, so I don't know all these facts, but my understanding is that at the time he was assassinated, he was politically, you know, a little bit shaky. Part of the reason he was going to Dallas was to firm up political support. So it wasn't so clear then that it was a successful presidency. So it may be that signal that indicated that maybe success was a little bit problematic was not so far off, but that factors, you know, outside of the economy have caused us to think of this as a highly successful presidency. In general, though, I would say the P10 tool gave a false read on that one, but I think with some extenuating factors applying. Now, Johnson came Johnson, of course, took over for Kennedy, but he won election on his own and was inaugurated in January of 65. The P10 level then was 23. That's a very high P10 level. That's the red alert danger zone. So the P10 tool is giving you a signal. This is not likely to be a successful presidency. And I think in this case, the tool does a very good job, because the Johnson administration, I would say, was not a successful presidency in that Johnson did not even run for re-election in 68. And I have always found that to be an incredible fact. The primary problem, I believe, that he had was the Vietnam War. You know, that was so contentious. And he felt that he couldn't get the nomination of his party, and he would just step down. But it's a remarkable thing for a president, an incumbent president, not to run for re-election. I mean, I don't think it's ever happened in my lifetime outside of Johnson. And Johnson had really, you know, aside from the P10 business, which gave a negative read, he had everything on his side. He was elected in 64, a huge landslide over Goldwater. I think he won just about every state. There were a couple. Goldwater maybe won two states, something like that. So huge landslide. These were good times for Americans. You know, I think those are the years when we got air conditioning. I mean, obviously it came in different houses at different times, but I remember when I was young, we didn't have it. Having air conditioning is a big plus in my book. So these were times when people were living better. These were sunny days. And, you know, just across the board, we had legislation. Johnson was the master of getting bills through Congress. He had huge margins in Congress and was able to get mostly everything he wanted through Congress. Civil rights legislation. You know, he was a legislator. That was his area of expertise, was the legislative process. So this guy should have been a hugely successful president. Now, if you want to blame it on Vietnam, that's fine. You know, just say PE-10 had nothing to do with it, and I won't argue with you. But I find it interesting that the PE-10 tool gives us a signal that perhaps you shouldn't get so excited about this landslide victory. Perhaps this president isn't going to be successful as you expect. And the reason that would be, you know, I don't dispute that Vietnam was the cause of the troubles that Johnson ran into. But, see, the way to think about it is, what if he had come in? What if when Johnson had come in, the PE-10 level was half? You know, instead of being 23, it was 12 or 13. He might have had a run-up from 13 to 26 during his years in office. And you might have had all these protests about the Vietnam War causing him trouble, but they would be countered by excitement over all the wealth flowing into people's lives so that he could have overcome those criticisms. You see, politically, he could have been successful despite those criticisms. That's the way to think about PE-10. PE-10 is it's not a crystal ball. It doesn't let you view events of the future. What it lets you do, is something more important than that. Something maybe less impressive. You know, if we could look at a crystal ball and see a picture of the headlines in the newspaper from 5 years from now, I guess that's more impressive. But what PE-10 does is, it's not as precise as that in its predictions, but it's broader in what it's looking at. It's not just looking at newspaper headlines. It's looking at a force, and this force is wealth, really, economic well-being, and sometimes it's reporting on temporary economic well-being. Overvaluation doesn't give permanent economic well-being, but it makes people feel good. And that's what a president needs to do to be a political success. Politics is perceptions. I mean, there's substance there. Substance matters too. Substance matters in investing. But the whole trouble with overvaluation is that perception can dominate. And perception can dominate for long periods of time, as long as a presidential term or two presidential terms. So I would say here that while I don't think... I wouldn't say that Johnson was a failed presidency because of the economic troubles he ran into. It was a failed presidency because of Vietnam. But had the PE-10 level been lower when he came into office, I think he could have overcame those troubles politically. The Troubles would have still been there, but they wouldn't have been as much of a political albatross as they became. So I think in this case, the P10 signal did a very good job, because in this case, no one would have anticipated Johnson having problems. With the mandate he won in his landslide victory, you would have expected huge success. And there was sort of a cloud on the horizon there, and the P10 tool is one of the few tools that would have pointed that out to those paying attention to it. Nixon came after Johnson, and Nixon was inaugurated in January of 69 with a P10 level of 21. Now, again, the P10 level here is high. So again, the signal that what you should have been expecting was a failed presidency. And you could argue that that's not, I mean, everyone, I think just about everyone would agree that ultimately the Nixon presidency was a failed presidency. Nixon was impeached and removed from office. So ultimately, it was a failed presidency. So ultimately, there's no question the P10 level predicted things accurately. But a lot, if you were trying to argue against the use of this tool to predict successful presidencies, you could say Nixon really had a sort of split presidency. The first term was hugely successful, and it was. Nixon, and I'm always talking in political terms when I say successful. I'm not talking about the policies. I'm talking about politically. Nixon won election by a whisker over Humphrey. Very close election. And when he ran for re-election in 72, he won a landslide victory over McGovern. McGovern only won two states, I believe. One or two. So that's a successful term. Nixon was a highly successful president. But see, the PE10, one of the frustrations of people that use PE10, both in stock predictions and in political predictions, is that it doesn't take, it's not a short-term predictor. It doesn't work in the short term. And of course, part of the problem we have is that presidential terms sometimes are 4 years, and sometimes if they're reelected, 8 years. You can't count on PE10 clicking into place in a year or two, and even 4 years, you can't count on it. But in 8 years, usually you can. So if it's a two-term presidency, usually the PE10 that applies on the inauguration day will tell a tale. But if it's a one-term presidency, maybe not. So what happened in the case of Nixon is that he had a bad PE10 level. You would have predicted a failed presidency, but it didn't kick in. He didn't have any trouble for the first 4 years, but it ultimately kicked in. Now, again, as with Johnson, people will say, the reason his presidency failed was Watergate. You know, he's impeached. That was the problem. Well, that's true. Just as with Johnson, the problem was Vietnam. He was impeached because of Watergate. But if you study Watergate, and I haven't studied it in a long time, but when it was going on, I paid quite a bit of attention to it. If you study Watergate, what you see is that, you know, the case against Nixon was being made for a long time. And as long as the economy was doing well, he was sailing above it. You know, he had this thing called the stonewall them. You know, that was their strategy. Well, stonewall, we're not going to answer questions. That's hard. It's a hard strategy to combat. And a lot of the public felt, that's just fine. We don't need these questions being asked or answered. What happened to Nixon is the economy started going down in his second term. We ended up in a recession. When the economy went down, a lot of the lawmakers who were standing behind Nixon abandoned him. Nixon was no longer popular in their districts. And the people who were standing behind him saying, he shouldn't have to answer your questions, were suddenly saying, I don't know this guy. Nixon support him? No, not me. No. I used to. No. I'm not a Nixon supporter. Don't. Who's Nixon anyway? You know, they abandoned him. And when they abandoned him, then of course Watergate took him down. But the point is that had Nixon come in with a much lower P10 level and had, you know, tons of money coming into the economy through increasing stock prices, increasing stock valuations, not just increasing prices, he might not have been removed in Watergate. You see, the political process is a multifaceted process, and you know, we can't rewrite history. We can't say what would have happened. But it's a little naive to believe that all of these decisions are made without the economy having an influence. I think the economy had an influence on Nixon's removal, and had the PE-10 level been lower when he came in, he would have stood a better chance of withstanding the political pressures he was under. So I think this is a case, again, where the PE-10 level gave you a pretty good clue. It didn't tell you, certainly didn't tell you Watergate was going to happen. Certainly didn't tell you he was going to win a landslide victory in after his first term and then be impeached in his second term. Didn't give you any details. What it did was it told you, be wary, because the most important thing a president can have going for him is a strong economy. And with a PE-10 level this high on your inauguration, you're at risk of some bone-crushing losses being delivered to your constituents over the course of the next 8 years. And that's what causes failed presidencies in the final analysis. Carter came in January of 77, at a PE-10 level of 11. That's low. One of the lowest on record. Probably the lowest of any of these presidents we're looking at. Carter would be described as a failed president politically. He did not win re-election. So he would certainly be described as a failed president. Any president that cannot win re-election is a failed president politically. The PE-10 level here is telling us that Carter should have had a successful presidency. In that sense, the tool fails us. But, one factor is that the tool often does not go into effect until, you know, we don't know. Sometimes the PE-10 level tells you what's going to happen next week. Sometimes it tells you what's going to happen next year. Sometimes it tells you what's going to happen 10 years from now. You can't count on it coming into effect for as long as 10 years. Usually in a two-term presidency, it will come into effect within 8 years, usually. But 4 years, it's a little more dicey. So you could chalk this up to just a situation where the PE-10 level was good. The PE-10 level was promising, a positive sign. But Carter was unlucky. If the goodies had started to have been delivered within the first 4 years, Carter would have been reelected. And he came close. The election was not super close, but a lot of voters swung Reagan's way in the last week or two of that election. A month before the election, they were, you know, Carter, I think, was actually ahead, or else they were very close. I believe Carter was ahead. Many people predicted Carter to win. I think the general consensus, my recollection is the general consensus is that Carter was going to win. So if Carter had won renomination, and that wasn't at all considered an outlandish scenario, the economy might have started soaring upward and Carter might have been a successful president. The other way you could analyze it is you could say Carter failed to take advantage of the opportunity. You could say that he had a grand opportunity with this low PE-10 level to have had a successful presidency, and, you know, for whatever reasons, he didn't pursue policies that made it happen. So, using PE-10 doesn't tell you the answers to these sorts of questions. But what it tells you is that the odds favored a successful presidency when Carter came in. It didn't happen. So you can say that the PE-10 level failed, or you can try to explain, you know, why this happened. And the PE-10 level is never something you can look at as your sole decision-making tool, either in the investing area or obviously in the political area. Reagan came in January of 81. With a PE-10 level of 9.25. Oh, that's even lower. I was saying Carter's was the lowest. That's even lower yet. That's got to be the lowest. 9.25. Well, what we have here is huge opportunity for a successful presidency, and that's what we had. This is a case where I feel PE-10 level works perfectly to predict what's going to happen. There are many people who did not predict success for President Reagan. As I say, many people did not think he was going to win in the first place. And when he did get in, many people thought his policies were going to fail. And he didn't have, you know, huge support in the Congress. I think a lot of Republicans did come in that year, so he did have some, but it was not overwhelming as it was, say, with Johnson or as it is with Obama. And the recession continued for the first year or two of Reagan's presidency. I think the first 2 years were bad years economically. So, when the recession continued, there were a lot of people saying, you know, this isn't working. But you look at that P10 level and you almost say, you know, how could it fail? Now, you know, again, you've always got this situation of when you've got a low P10 level, you don't know how long it's going to take to turn around. It's not going to stay at 9.2. And it's not going to stay at 9. So you know it's going up. And even if it stayed at 9, investors would be earning 6% real. So if it goes up from 9 to 15, investors are earning huge returns. The most likely 10-year return when the P10 level is 9 is probably something like 15% real per year. I don't know the exact number. You can look at the stock return predictor, but it's a big number. You know, it's probably something around 14-15 per year. So the opportunity that was delivered to Reagan was huge, and he cashed in on that opportunity. He had a hugely successful presidency, not renominated 4 years. I mean, reelected 4 years later by a landslide, massive landslide. And in '88, when Reagan stepped down, his party was able to retain the presidency. That's unusual. So he had a super successful presidency in political terms. Now, if you want to give credit to his economic policies, his tax cuts, that's fine. I don't take a position. This is a political analysis, I'm not advocating any particular set of policies. But saying that PE10 is what caused him to be successful is not saying that the policies were not good. It's neutral on that point. It could be that the policies were great. See, what makes the P10 level go up is confidence. You're increasing the confidence of investors, or you're increasing the confidence of middle class workers. Good policies will do that. So it could be that he had good policies, but it could be that he didn't too. It is sort of a pet peeve of mine that people will look at. It doesn't have to be Reagan. It could be Clinton. You know, it's on a bipartisan basis. People will look at these things and they'll say, the economy improved. Therefore, his policies are good. You know, that's not a scientific test. Especially not in a world where most people don't understand overvaluation, and they don't understand that if you come in with a low P10 level, the natural tendency is for it to go up. And if it goes up, you're generating temporary wealth. And temporary wealth makes people feel that whatever policies you adopted are winners. But, the quote-unquote winning may not be permanent. It may not last. But, of course, if it crashes, you know, under your successor's term, he gets the blame, not you. In other words, what I'm saying is that the way we measure, the way we assess presidential success is not entirely valid. It's not entirely fair. But there's nothing we can do about that. I'm not suggesting it. I'm giving a different way to look at it, and I'm saying the policies may have been good, the policies may not have been good, but when you come into office with a P10 level of 9, you've got the wind blowing at your back. You've got a lot of things working in your favor. And in this case, P10 did a good job of predicting presidential success. It's just what we saw. We saw just what you would have expected to see, even though many commentators at the time were doubtful as to how successful Reagan would be. Now, Bush 1 came in January of 89. The P10 level was 15. That's not high. That's not low. That's fair value. So it doesn't give you much of a signal. I would I would call the Bush presidency a failed presidency, and that he did not win re-election, so he's rejected by the voters. I wouldn't say that PE10 predicted a failed presidency. It really didn't give a signal. Probably it failed us in that it didn't predict a failed presidency. But it didn't fail us in that it didn't get it wrong, but it didn't really get it right either. It just sort of, it was a neutral call. It was a neutral signal, and the result was negative. So you could attribute this. You could just say that I think it would be fair to say, given what happened in the Clinton years, which we'll get to next, I think it would be fair to say that Bush 1 squandered an opportunity, because the PE10 level in a technical sense was not low. 15 is not low. 15 is fair value. But when you look at what happened under Clinton, clearly there was potential there for the PE10 level to go a lot higher. There were forces coming into effect in the 90s. When Bush was in office late 80s and early 90s, there were forces coming into effect that perhaps if he had followed different policies, he could have taken advantage of. And the force that I think, I'm planning a separate podcast on the question of why did prices go so insane in the 90s? I think that's an interesting question, and I'd like to look at the different factors. But I think the single biggest factor there is the popularity of passive investing. Passive investors have always been emotional. We've always been led by our emotions. That's just historical. But what the passive investing school gave us was a scientific justification for being emotional. Passive investors don't just say it's okay to give into your emotions. They say there are academic studies saying that that's a good idea, that that will work. So that, I believe, is what caused prices to go to the most insane levels we've ever seen. Now, Bush obviously didn't know that. I don't say different, but he had an opportunity, I think, in that passive investing was clearly becoming popular in the late 80s and early 90s. And passive investing was going to permit the PE10 level to go to unheard of heights. And if he had just sort of put forward whatever policies were necessary to tap into that growing confidence on the part of investors, he might have had a more successful presidency. So I think there was my take on this is that there was possibly a bit of a squandered opportunity there. Now, Clinton, who followed, very much took advantage of that, of the opportunity that Bush squandered. Clinton came in January of 93. The PE10 level was 20. That's dangerous. It's not insanely dangerous. Not as bad as what we saw under Johnson or even under Nixon. But it's certainly on the high side. It's the threshold of the danger zone. So it's not an insanely bad PE10 level, but certainly not a good PE10 level. 20 is a signal of a failed presidency. Now, Clinton did not have a failed presidency. In political terms, I would argue, I would put him up there with Reagan in political terms. The most successful president, two presidents that of this list, of those during my lifetime. The reason I say that is that Clinton won re-election. That's one of the tests of political success. His party did not retain power when he left office at the end of 8 years, but it came awfully close. Al Gore lost that election by a whisker, had to go to the Supreme Court to be decided. So that's the mark of a successful presidency. But Clinton was even more successful than that, politically. That's why I'm always speaking here politically, not in terms of right or wrong, I'm just speaking politics. Politically, he was even more successful because Clinton was impeached. Now, many people don't use that phrase, but I believe that's proper. I believe the way it works is that the House decides whether to impeach you, and he lost the vote in the House, so he was impeached, but he was not convicted. The Senate votes on conviction, and the Senate voted not to convict. So he was impeached. He just was not removed. He was not convicted. The obvious question to ask is, Why is it that Nixon was removed and Clinton wasn't? And I made the argument earlier that the reason Nixon was removed was largely economic. It was largely a function of a declining PE10 value. Well, I think in Clinton's case, just the opposite is true. Clinton came in with a high PE10 level. He left with a whole big bunch higher PE10 level. When Bush 2 came in, the PE10 level was 37. So there was a huge increase in PE10 during Clinton's administration. That might be the highest of any president. I've never calculated it, but that's a huge increase. It's nearly a doubling of the PE10 value. So what we have with Clinton is a president who came in PE10 terms with the wind blowing in his face, holding him back. And yet, he was able to overcome that. Now, you can attribute it to two things. You can attribute it to him. You could say his political skills or his policies were so good that he was able to overcome this huge PE10 handicap. I think that's a fair read of it, that his political skills were, there with Reagan's. The other way of reading it is you could say passive investing was just a historical reality that he was just lucky to live during the time when passive investing caused PE10 levels we've never seen before. I can't say. But what I can say is that our signal was a failed presidency, and in political terms, it was not a failed presidency at all. It was a highly successful presidency. So the signal failed, but the facts, the circumstances were highly unusual because PE10 levels went to levels that never could have been anticipated. Bush 2 came in January of 2001, PE10 level of 37. Well, Bush was doomed. Bush was doomed, friends and neighbors. That's not fair. I think of I'm playing Monopoly a lot with my boys. They've sort of caught on to the game, and so for a long time we used to read at night, and I still try to read to them at night. And other nights we watch a sitcom. Andy Griffith, or from the old days, or sometimes an adventure movie. They like Star Wars. We watch those sorts of movies. But now lately we've been playing Monopoly a lot. I try to spend time with the boys at night before they go to bed, and so we've been playing. And I love Monopoly. It's my favorite game, so I love it, and my boys love it. But a lot of times, you do all this work, to build up a Monopoly. You make a good trade, You've got it all figured out, and you're just unlucky, And just, that's not fair. That's not fair. That's one of the bad things about Monopoly. It's a great game strategically, but there's a lot of unfairness in it. Of course, with little kids, it hurts them sometimes. Makes them want to cry. So that's the one thing I have against the game. It's a great game, and it's intellectually challenging, but it hurts sometimes. It hurts as a grown-up, so I know it hurts the boys sometimes. But of course, they love it when they win. That's the other side. But Bush, no one should have to come into office with a PE10 level of 37. That's just not fair. So I think Bush was doomed. If you take a PE10 analysis, he was doomed from the first day. The remarkable thing, he was a failed president in that he wasn't a totally failed president in that he did win re-election. So you have to give him that. He won re-election. But when he left office, power switched to the other party, and his political approval ratings were at the lowest, we've seen. So I would call it a failed presidency. The remarkable thing in Bush's case is that he was able to win re-election with a PE10 level of 37. He shouldn't have even lasted 4 years. You almost think he should have been removed after two. They would have came up with some new provision, People would be studying the books, because you can't survive as a president with a PE10 level of 37. You're looking at an economic crash of mammoth proportions at that PE10 level. How can you hold it off? I think what happened in Bush's case, one is that 9/11 probably helped him. That gave him enough support to win re-election. And the other is that this whole passive investing phenomenon has played out so slowly. The rules of overvalue, the rules of rational investing, that have always applied in the stock market going back to the first day have continued to apply in the passive investing era, but they've applied in a slow, grinding way. Many people, you know, Robert Shiller gave his testimony predicting, an economic catastrophe back in 1996. And it didn't really happen until, 2008. So he was right on the big picture question, but he was wrong about the timing. And how could anyone not be wrong? No one's ever seen anything like this. As I say, I attribute that to this idea that there's something scientific about, staying at the same stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. You combined an emotional desire for a get-rich-quick scheme with a scientific stamp of approval, peer-reviewed studies. And you create a weird dynamic. But that weird dynamic is what kept Bush going for as long as he could go. But ultimately, it would have been something to pull off. I don't see how he could have. There's no way he could have made the P10 level higher when he left office. It had to go lower, and it had to go dramatically lower over 8 years. And when the P10 level drops as much as it had to drop, it obviously dropped from 36 down to 14. 37 to 14. When it drops that much, it's hard to see how you're going to have a successful presidency. You can't square the circle. Obama came in January of 2009, with a P10 level of 14. What's going to happen to our new president? 14, if you just look at the number, you would say that's a good P10 level. That's a nice low. It's not low, but it's fair value, but it's not high. So you'd say that's a nice P10 level to come in on. You've got a lot of running room to run that number up and create a lot of wealth, temporary wealth, in addition to whatever permanent wealth you create with your other policies. But, the job is not just to create temporary wealth, but politically that obviously helps. So you could say that's a good sign. If you look just at the number, you would say that the PE10 level predicts a successful presidency for President Obama. The trouble, the other side of the story, is the factor I mentioned when we were looking at Eisenhower, that Eisenhower had a 13, very similar to Obama's number. And I said that that predicted a successful presidency. But the big difference is that with Eisenhower, you could go back for two decades of low PE10 levels. So the ground was ready, for bringing forth a great crop. The ground had been fertilized. It was ready. Whereas with Obama, just the opposite is true. You have these disaster years where we've just been raping the soil with this these P10 levels of 20 and 25 and 30, and God help us all, 44. Heaven help us all. So Obama's coming in a situation where, if it's a question of it's going to take 2 years to recover from the passive investing era, he's fine. He can have a, if Obama's able to stabilize the P10 level, he will have a successful presidency. If 4 years from now the P10 level is still 14, I think he'll be in good shape. I don't think people are expecting, miracles. His risk is that the three times in history before this, when we've gone to insane price levels, we didn't drop just to fair value. We dropped to 50% below fair value. That's the risk. And if we have a drop to a P10 level of 7, that's going to be heavy medicine, because you're coming from 44 to 7. 44 is, 6 times higher than 7. So that means we lost 5/6 of our wealth. And I just don't know. I don't think the economy can stand that. So I think it all turns on whether he can stabilize it. I think I don't think he needs to increase it. I think it's unhealthy to increase it. My biggest fear is that we're going to see these various bills go through this year in an effort to, they call it stimulus, economic stimulus. And if we see too much stimulus, and people start to buy it, and the stock market, you know, the P10 level goes up, that would make me very nervous, because that to me would be a false confidence. It would be a confidence based solely on stimulus, which is sort of a sideshow. It's not a deep confidence. And my fear would be a couple years down the road, that bubble would pop and we'd have another price crash down to 7. And then that would be, you know, see, psychologically, that would be devastating. Psychologically, being let down, this is really the second big crash. I mean, you can measure it different ways, but we had a tech crash in 2000 and we had a broader crash in 2008. That's about as many punches as we can take, because they both were pretty hard punches. If we have another punch equally hard or harder in 3 years, I think we're going to buckle. I don't even want to think about where that takes us. So I don't look forward to the idea of an increase in P10. I'd like to see a more solid stabilization of where we are. And I don't know. You know, I have no idea where we're going to go. It all depends on confidence. It depends on psychological factors. You know, those events have to play out. All the P10 doesn't predict the events. All it does is it just tells you the odds, tells you the environment. So looking at it solely in terms of the number, you'd say Obama has odds in his favor. But looking at the overall environment, I'd say I'm not so sure. The overall environment, I think, is rough. I think it's more comparable to Carter than it is to Eisenhower. You know, Carter came in with a low PE10 level, but a sort of poisoned environment, and wasn't able to turn it around in time. If I were advising Obama, my strategy, for what it's worth, you know, I lose in Monopoly as often as I win, so I'm no great strategist, but my thought would be to not do anything to pump the PE10 level up for several years, to sort of let things... I don't think things will go lower. I don't think we need any economic stimulus to keep it from dropping, because people, you know, it's determined by psychology. And most people believe the market... They're already shocked at the amount it's dropped. So most people don't believe there's any need for any further drop. There's not. They're right about that. But... It's not a situation where if the president doesn't jump in, there's going to be a further drop. I don't see that. Anytime it were to drop, somebody would rush in and buy, because people would feel prices were too low. So I'm not really afraid of a drop. I don't say it can't happen. I just say I don't fear it. I don't think he needs to worry about that too much. But if he allows it to stabilize or drop a little bit, then... You know, see, that's getting the soil in better shape. And then 2 years from now, you might be able to start prodding it upward just a little bit. And I don't believe in overdoing it. You know, it's not a situation where you want to come on too strong, because you come on too strong, you have to let confidence grow naturally. You can't force it. You can't say to somebody, I want you to trust me. I want you to be confident. The louder you yell at them, the less they believe you. You've got to just let them come to you. And that's what we're looking to do. We're trying to get the middle class investor to regain confidence in his stock market and in the institutions, you know, in the system of government and system of the economic system we work under. You can't force it. So just saying, oh, you know, it's a panic, we've got to do something. Well, sometimes doing something is the worst thing to do. I do think we should be looking to understand what happened. That's what we should be doing. We should be doing, you know, I don't want to call it intellectual work, but intellectual / emotional work. We should be trying to diagnose what went wrong, but not necessarily doing frantic sort of activities. The more frantic the activity, the less successful it's likely to be, in my opinion. It's just my opinion. So I think if we were to see some bad economic years here, that might be the best thing for Obama's presidency for 2 years. And then gently inching up in the third year, and then maybe a good fourth year, and then he wins re-election, then you've got a successful, you know, presidency on your hand. Then you could start kicking into higher gear and have a successful presidency. But I worry that if we see the P10 level, you know, he's got total control. That can be a curse. He's got control of both houses of Congress, total control. That can be a curse, because now you have no one, you know, effectively making the other side. You can just sort of do what you think is right, and that might sound like a great thing, but a lot of us make terrible mistakes when we get too much power. And if you start thinking you know it all, and you start pumping the number up, and you start celebrating, but within, the psychological reality of the middle class investor is we haven't really earned this upturn. We've still got more to come, and it collapses. You know, then you've got a re-election coming at a time, in the worst sort of psychological environment. So, the number itself is a positive signal. I think the environment is a negative signal. So at best, the PE10 gives Obama a draw. I would say it's slightly negative. It's more comparable to the Carter situation than to the Eisenhower situation. But certainly not a hopeless situation. Certainly not a George Bush 2 situation. I think George Bush 2 was doomed based on the PE10 number. And Obama's dealing from a much better deal of the cards than George Bush 2 was dealt. So that's our little parlor game. That's our using the PE10 number to predict presidential success. I think it's an interesting way to look at things. As I say, please don't take it too seriously. It has limited value, but I don't think it has zero value. It gives you an idea of what PE10 levels mean. What the PE10 level is telling you is how phony is the wealth that you hold today. If you have money in stocks, most of us do. How real is that wealth and how phony is it? And phony wealth helps politically. It helps perceptions. But of course, it doesn't help you plan for your retirement. So what you want to do is, you know, for this parlor game, you're just looking at the perception factor. You know, you're looking at the outside. You're just looking at the trappings. But in terms of building an effective plan for financial freedom, you of course want to look through the PE10. You want to look to the reality. You always want to adjust whatever your portfolio is for what it would be if the P10 were a fair value number. That way you know what your real wealth is versus what your cotton candy wealth is, and you can more effectively make decisions as to how much to spend, you know, where to spend it, what sort of stock allocation to go with, and all that sort of thing. If you have feedback, please let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at the Contact Rob button on the left side of each page at the website, PassionSaving.com. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.